This podcast is presented by the Earth Hotel.
Start us off, buddy.
We have a giveaway coming out as soon as we drop our Patreon. Right. As soon as our Patreon goes live. And can somebody let me know what that URL is just so when it goes live? We will make a post on Twitter.
Space Mother.
And Instagram.
Let us know.
Oh, okay.
Space Mother. Oh, happy Mother's Day, Podcast Mom.
Happy Mother's Day, by the way, Podcast Mom. Okay, yeah.
We'll put it in the show
notes. Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. We'll have the link in the show notes and everything so you guys can click on it. And remember, the first three donors to our Patreon win their very own set of Kraken dice.
Yeah, and we got three different sets, too. I saw them on the order list.
Yeah, I have them on the order list.
Really pretty.
Oh, nice little mystery set. We don't even know what they're going to get. So, yeah, and that's with Kraken Dice, and you can find all their great stuff at www.krakendice.com. I didn't say just two W's that time.
So proud.
But also, you can find them on Kickstarter, and they have a lot of dice sets that they're trying to kickstart so they can make them public. And that's where they get their money, too, is not only from selling the products, but having your help keep them going on Kickstarter.
Hell yeah.
And you get stuff out of the Kickstarter. Like, you're getting things for helping them
out. Lovely. Throw money at them. Yep. Throw money at them so that we get better.
One more thing.
We got another one now.
As a new development, somebody that actually is working in close relationship with Kraken Dice, this great company called Dogmite Games. You can find them at www.dogmite.com. Yeah. www.dogmite.com.
Three W's again.
Yeah, I'm nailing it, man.
Really getting it tonight.
When you said .com, did you mean three O's? Or?
No. That was a questioning whether it's not .com or .org. They're a great website. They have wonderful, beautiful, gorgeous wooden like dice trays.
Absolutely. Beautiful.
Yeah. They have things called dragon sheaths where they're like they hold your minis and your dice for you, like your characters, so you can carry your stuff. They're making sets of wooden dice for KrakenDice.com, so they're working together. It's really cool that two of our advertisers are working together, and they have this really cool game master system. So it's a wooden like game screen that has a tray built into it, and it also has a initiative order thing on top.
Nice.
Is that the one with the inserts?
Yes, with the inserts.
So you can set it up for any game that you're running.
For any game, you just print out the pages that you need for the inserts, and you can go.
Yeah, for all of our Dark Heresy players out there, just print off the Index Terribilis and
insert. There you go.
Go to town.
So they have a lot of great products. They're a great group of folks over there, and they're so great that they're offering our listeners a 15% off coupon with the use of the code word TURN. That's TURN.
Lowercase T.
Nice.
So when you do your orders, you go to their website, you order something, and you type in TURN at your checkout, and you get 15% off.
Yeah.
And it's great. Yeah, it's great. So it helps everybody out, and we really want to spread the love because they've been super big supporters of the show and everything, and so we want to support them back, and they want to support us, and so we're all supporting each other, and it makes me all feel happy and fuzzy inside.
Speaking of supporting each other, Echo 5 has been really nice about giving us shout-outs, so I think it's only fair that we give them one more on the show here. Echo 5 Studios, if you want to get some more D&D action, they're a local charity sort of group. All of their proceeds from their Twitch stream and their YouTube content and their site go towards whatever charity they've decided on for their current donation, which is the Humane Society of Alabama. I believe it's the Humane Society of Birmingham specifically, but I might be wrong on that. I know their current goal is $1,500, so go donate. Go watch them. Throw some money towards them. Help some animals.
They're on twitch.tv/Echo5Studios, and they play every Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Right now, their schedule is J&J Dissect on Mondays at 9, Wild Card on Wednesdays at 9. Thursdays, they're currently doing a Let's Play of Divinity 2.
Nice to get in on that.
And then they have D&D game Saturday at 2:30 p.m. We're the good guys.
Yeah. Go check them out. Jay Dorn's a sweetheart. He was really nice. He hit up a conversation with me just because I was wearing that stupid Escape to Margaritaville shirt.
At
the brewery.
Yeah. The Curse of Straw Jimmy Buffett shirt. Yeah.
He was my out in the open Craigslist casual encounter. Yeah.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jay.
And all the guys at Echo 5 Studios. Great content. Go ahead and give them a follow and everything like that. I know I do. I like to watch their stuff sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Let's get back to it, guys. It's all right, Beyonce. I think you're cute, too.
Jesus. We watched that yesterday.
Krispy Kreme, 2012.
It's just...
World-class rapper.
Cringiest thing I've ever seen. No, not cringiest thing I've ever seen, but it's up there.
Yeah.
It is high up there.
Yeah.
He's made out with all the girls in the world, so I'm sorry to tell you that apparently I have made out with Krispy Kreme.
That's...
He'll light your fart on fire with his rounds.
Okay.
He could beat you even if you had infinity knives.
That's a lot of knives.
He was like, I could beat you even if you had like nine knives. And he was like, I could beat you even if you had infinity knives. And I'm like,
that's a leap. That's a jump, my friend.
Also very, very improbable considering the stature and age of this.
I think he could do it.
Beat you.
I choose to be optimistic about this young lad who ran into copyright trouble with Krispy Kreme brand and had to change his name to Froggy Fresh.
Which Froggy Fresh is actually a better name than Krispy Kreme. Neither of them are good names.
Both are bad, but I would rather have Froggy Fresh.
I mean, it sounds like a children's brand of like Listerine, but Froggy Fresh.
Krispy Kreme sounds like an STD. Yeah.
Well, now I can't ever eat at Krispy Kreme again.
Yeah, we're going to have to go to new donut place now.
Because we go to donut places
just
all
go
the
to
time.
All the time.
Just go to Shipley's.
We're at donut places.
Give you some kolaches.
We did talk about kolaches yesterday. Dottie and I really had a strong bonding experience.
We had a podcast date, and it was great.
We hung out forever, for hours and hours. Dottie helped me deal with the whole shakiness I had yesterday, which I believe is what culminated in my fever today. I hope we're not recording.
We're recording.
I don't want the listeners to know that I can get sick.
No, that's all right.
No, I want them to think I'm invincible.
Your feeble immune system is going to be more crippled now. Are we recording, though?
Okay. All right. Cool.
I would just like to say that Dottie's back. Back again. Guess who's back? Tell a friend. Oh, God. Welcome to second season of Whose Turn Is It?
Oh.
We've had some changes. Dash was angered by the fact that Klein survived his murder puzzle, so
yeah, that
he doubled
actually,
down on that.
You know, I really thought I had gotten away with murdering Klein, but turns out...
you gotta do it twice.
Yeah, I had to really commit this time. I'm glad you guys have forgiven me for that, though.
No, Klein rhymes with nine, and cats have nine lives, but Klein's not a cat, so you just need to kill him twice.
Okay.
I like that logic.
I think it works. I don't... Yeah.
Like, if I wanted to kill Turtle, I'd have to kill... How many times has Turtle died?
God, who knows? Speaking of Klein, he doesn't even believe that Turtle is the same cat he first met, so...
yeah.
He's like, this is other Turtle. This is not Turtle. I'm like...
Possessed, like, cat corpse.
He thinks it's Turtle from a different dimension. That's what he said. Yeah.
I mean, it does add some like color to Turtle's life story, I guess.
I got pace when I take a sip from that, or else you guys are gonna get a spit take.
That's
on this fucking pop filter.
That sounds sexy.
I mean, I'm down for it. I think the listeners are too.
So you can obviously hear Alex. Alex is our new fourth member.
Hello.
She's the new boy.
I am now.
She's our new boy.
I'm now a boys.
I don't think we can say the boys are back in town.
We could just call Alex a boy.
I mean, we spell it B-O-I-Z, so I think that's pretty all-inclusive.
Yeah, that's an all-inclusive term.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's gender neutral.
It's boys.
It's boys.
But, I mean, yeah, do we want to, you know, Klein?
Thanks, Klein, for helping out in the first season, fond farewells and all that stuff.
We appreciate everything you did for us. Thank you so much.
It is easy to say that the first season would have never happened without
Klein. Oh, no way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we respect you by replacing you with a girl.
We respect you by me burping into the mic. I'm so sorry.
No, we do love you, Klein.
We needed to hide the remains. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm the only one who knows where the body's buried. So if we ever decide to bring him back, I'll drag him back out.
It's a void.
Right.
You can't hide anything in the void.
You say
we're already here.
You say that.
However, you can hide things in what I void.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a poop joke.
Well, we have just covered a lot of bodily functions today. Yeah,
that's all right. Alex and I took a little podcast date over to Excelsior Comics.
It was lovely.
One of our local game stores to interview Kenneth Oswald, a local store owner.
Right.
But also a old man who likes to play role-playing games and has done so since before Advanced Dungeons & Dragons was called Advanced.
Yeah, you were telling me about this.
Like back in the yellow pages of Dungeons & Dragons right. day, back when Gygax had a number in the back of the book. And also a systems creator with one system, I believe, coming out this year.
Oh, awesome.
And another system that's going into alpha testing this year.
Okay.
But yeah, we had a nice time over there.
Oh, yeah. He was a perfect complement to our podcast date. It was great. Yeah.
Now, the interview itself was pretty short. It was only about 30 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to supplement it by putting some filler in here at the very beginning. And then after the interview, we'll discuss what was talked about there. But before we get into that, how was your week in gaming?
My week in gaming. Oh, man.
Oh, and Wes isn't here. We should also mention that Wes isn't here.
Oh, yeah, Wes is not.
He had a family issue that needed addressing.
Recently, I ran one with our friend Aeon. I don't believe I had run the one with you and Wes before we took a break.
No, we did.
Oh, did we? Okay, I may have already addressed it then.
The artist one?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, okay. So probably, I guess, the main one then has been I ran one for Aeon for her character Olivier Toussaint. I think that's really the only major thing I've done. I've got a few games in the works, hopefully maybe this week, over the next couple of weeks.
I have a question.
Sure.
Is this Aeon character also one that I would automatically hate?
Yes.
Okay. She needs to stop doing that if she wants her characters to survive.
I'm not going to say anything on that matter.
You've said it plenty already. This isn't like a gaming in the past week. This is a gaming the past month. We've been gone for a while.
Yeah. Right.
Sorry to abandon you for a month, listeners, but we need to take care of some shit.
I need a little bit of a break.
Yeah, everyone deserves a break. Yeah, summer. The beginning of summer is really busy for all of us. But I guess for the past month in gaming, I finally got around to running another session of Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
That went well. You guys were at the boss fight.
Right.
Yes.
Which hopefully I'll be able to. It won't be next week, but the week after that we'll do the other D&D session.
Uh-huh.
Close it out. And then ran Dark Heresy. That was fun. You guys still fucking up my plans.
Right.
Always.
Luckily, you did wander right into my murder puzzle, so we get to use the big map.
Fantastic.
Woo-hoo.
The big 100 meters map.
That is big.
Yeah, it's not 100 meters large. It's 100, like, it's 100 squares.
Yeah, there's no way we're going to get outside. That's a lot.
We could just lay it out in the backyard and like do it chess style from Harry Potter, where we just stand where our characters are. No.
Right, yeah.
I'm just going to relate everything to Harry Potter in this podcast. Just all of it.
That's probably
I'm starting
be a lot
to second
aggressive.
Guess if we should bring back Klein's desiccated corpse.
Maybe just prop him up or something, you know?
What have you got going on the past month, Alex?
Well, I haven't run anything because I don't really do that, but I probably should at some point.
Yeah, I should mention that Alex is going to bring a cool dynamic to our podcast as the rest of us are GMs. She's a hopeful GM,
Perspective.
I suck at words. Prospective GM. But more so a player, so it'd be nice to get a hot take from Alex.
Woohoo! Yeah, no, I played in your games. I have not had my artist session, which
it's coming.
I know it's coming, but like it's been like a month and a half, and my character Nyx is just in this really terrible position, and it's like it stresses me out. Like she's been stuck in limbo for a month and a half.
I'm glad it stresses you out.
I know you are. But yeah, mostly just playing in Dottie's games, reading over some game stuff. Not much here.
Running away from ghosts.
Running away from ghosts. I do that on the
watching
reg.
Hereditary.
Oh my god, Hereditary. Oof.
I'm eating Klein's dead corpse. What else do you want me to talk about?
I guess that's a fair point. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the void. I can't get in trouble for it here.
That's true. We do really need to establish laws, probably, or
Wait,
something.
So is this like a like an endless purge situation?
No, this is like an endless Mad Max situation, but without the cars.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a really boring Mad Max.
Okay.
It's like a very boring Mad Max.
Like the first half of Thunderdome.
Oh, I haven't seen Thunderdome.
It's pretty boring.
It's pretty boring.
Except when two men enter and one man leaves.
Except for that. Except for the weird announcer's badass suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Master Blaster. Let's get on into that interview. Anyways, this is our interview with Kenneth Oswald, and we'll be back at the end to talk a little bit about it.
That's true. They did hit an entire iceberg, so I'd assume there was a lot of it around.
That was planned. It was an inside job.
Inside the water.
Titanic, the inside job.
Are we good, Podcast Mom?
Thanks, Podcast Mom.
Welcome to Whose Turn Is It? Where usually it would be four quasi-charming narcissists talking about games and shit. But this time it's just two of the chuckle fucks, me, Michael Boddy, and...
And Alex Kitson over here.
But we are also joined by...
Ken Oswald.
Yes. Ken is a...
Surprise.
Local store owner for us here in Alabama, but also a content creator for role-playing games.
Oh, yeah. Those are the best.
Those are the best.
That is what we talk about.
Oh, funsies.
Well, we pretend to talk. we pretend to know a lot more than we actually do.
Me especially, yeah.
Ken, we had some questions for you today, but where did you get your start in role-playing games?
Oh, my gosh. This is going to show my age.
Yeah, so this is going to show your age a lot.
So
you were born before Gygax, right?
Well, except before or after horse-drawn carts, I don't know. No, I was in seventh grade when I started. I was in Virginia, of all places, Richmond, Virginia, away from my Southern heritage for a little while. And while I was there, kids were talking about this crazy new thing called Dungeons & Dragons. And that's kind of what got me interested in it. And I didn't actually play or look into it until months after that.
He did way better than I did. I heard about it in seventh or eighth grade too. I didn't get into it until I was 19.
Oh yeah,
some of us are late bloomers.
It's true.
I didn't get into it until I was 24. So
your boyfriend sucked you into this.
My boyfriend did. Well, he wasn't my boyfriend when I started. So
yeah, that's fair.
RPGs do that.
I've noticed.
It's a relationship builder.
The R stands
so
for relationship.
So you started in whether that be D&D 2 second edition.
No.
I don't fucking know your age. What are you now? 50-ish?
Just 50.
Okay. I was close.
Yeah, that's pretty close. You didn't have to go any further than that. So yeah, the target date you're looking at is 1981. Most people, when they say Redbox, they're referring to a later version of D&D than what I played.
You had the Yellow Pages?
I had, yes.
Yeah.
The Yellow Pages that you flip to the back, and there's the number for Gary, and you got going.
I have one of those booklets with the blue pages towards the back where they had run out of yellow paper.
Right. Well, really, I really started D&D with the Magenta box set. Ooh. With Erol Otis's artwork. So that was basic D&D. I didn't know, the difference between basic and advanced. And you guys probably don't really know that.
No, we pretend to our knowledge.
AD&D, there was a time when you didn't refer to Dungeons & Dragons. If you did, then you didn't know what you were talking about. You said AD&D or Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. If you weren't talking about that, you were not into role-playing at all. You were not.
For our usual listeners, this is us being humbled this week.
Yeah.
So yeah, I started that and then eventually got into what you would call regular, what you guys call Dungeons & Dragons now, the hard book editions.
You're a walking encyclopedia for this shit, really. I have a question on this. So you have D&D, AD&D. The audio track thing was like second edition, I think.
Yeah. That would have been when I was in college, and
that's what I started.
It was a little blurry.
We started on that second edition thing, just because that audio track is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Was there any other contemporary role-playing games alongside that that had that same sort of popularity, or was it sort of a hard niche to find?
No, at that time, Dungeons & Dragons was it. Even by the time you get to second edition, you know, you're still talking late 80s.
Yeah.
While there are other RPGs out there, and there are certainly some that had popularity, RuneQuest was probably third most popular at that time. The world had exploded with RPGs at that point. There were a lot more than most people are aware of. But really, when you're talking about role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons was it. That was the go-to. That was the series.
So you, we wanted to bring you on because you're designing your own systems. You've got a couple of them I know you're doing, but you have one major one that we wanted you to give a outlet.
Just the one.
You've got one major one that you're willing to talk about. Right,
I'm willing to talk about both.
Are you talking about both? Oh, okay. I didn't know. When we spoke about this a couple months ago, you were kind of cagey about the second one.
The problem is when you're working on one and you're angling to do something.
You don't want to get distracted.
Bigger, yeah. You don't want to get distracted. Ultimately, I want this to go into Kickstarter, and so I'm kind of putting all my effort into that. So yeah, if you get to talking about something to the side, then you get a little too interested in that. It becomes distracting.
We'll be sure to distract you on this podcast.
All the distract. Well, as role-playing gamers, right? You're all happy with your campaign. You've got your group together. You're so excited with it. And somebody shows up one day and says, "Hey guys, have you played Magic the Gathering?"
So you mentioned at the beginning of this, before we started actually recording, if we had hung up our personal games. No, we're still running them. So I run into this problem with the Dark Heresy D&D thing. I'm going to hang up D&D for a while just because I'm going to get bored of Sword and Sorcery, which you said is
screw that
heresy. No, I totally get where you're coming from. I have I'm like McDonald's in like the 90s. I have my finger on too many pies because their own pies are fucking terrible.
Sure.
So we looked at your history.
Sure.
For where you got into it. Where did you get into designing systems?
Oh my, that's tough too.
That's sort of adding rules, but more designing an entire system.
Well, here's the scary thing. I wrote my first game when I was in second grade.
Nerd.
Wow.
Nerd.
So I took out a little sheet of notebook paper and I drew an anthill. It would be what you would call a dungeon nowadays, crossed with all sorts of tunnels and stuff. And inside it, there were little pockets where eggs would lie, and these eggs were different point values. And I recorded all of that information on one side of the sheet of paper. And on the other was the anthill that the player saw. And they would explore the anthill and go into these chambers and find these eggs and get points, and they would have to avoid the rotten ones because that spoiled all their points.
Wow.
So this was second grade.
Yeah, so this is in your blood. Yeah.
Apparently, yeah. There was nothing that precipitated that I'm aware of. It just I decided I wanted to do that, and there we went.
What I've seen with a lot of mechanics interested people, system mechanics interested people, is they start with designing a lot of their stuff really early on, or getting into that kind of stuff really early on. Me and my brothers started off. So BattleTech was a miniatures game when we were kids, but BattleTech, even now, it's confusing as shit to me.
Okay.
As a miniature game.
You mean the Catalyst version, which was the old FASA version? Okay. Yeah.
I'm sure there are plenty of people who enjoy it.
You know, it's weird because I hear a lot of people talk about that game and they say the exact same thing. They go, man, it's so complicated. There's so much crunch to it.
I don't think it's actually complicated. It's just, it's intimidating to somebody. Who is used to? I
grew up where I took out these encyclopedia rule books, flipped open, and there's a bell curve for stats, that you're going to be rolling. So I don't think by the time I explored BattleTech, I was done with being intimidated.
But we had written up rules, connects, the little plastic build construction things. We were really into building mechs out of that, mech warriors out of that. We had written up rules to have our own sort of, miniatures tabletop game built around that. This laser does this many parts of damage kind of stuff. But I've noticed that people who tend to gravitate towards design or mechanics, system mechanics design, the board game design heavy.
Crunchy bits.
The crunchy bits. There we go. Better with your words than I am. The crunchy bits of role-playing games tend to get into it from a very young age. It is with you for your life.
I was, even when I had heard first heard Dungeons & Dragons, I was already deciding what that was for myself. Like, I didn't have the rule books, had not even seen the game, had not played the game, but I already started drawing dungeons and trying to figure out how what I was hearing people were doing, how that would work. So yeah, by the time that I had purchased my first box set and started putting together my first game, and I was running it from, because no one in Greenville, Alabama was doing that. So I was introducing them to it. Yeah, so I was putting that stuff together and started writing right around that time, either my own adventures, new rules to add to it, new magic items, you name it.
Did you mean like trying to figure out how people had worked the rules in to accommodate like a tilting floor sort of trap or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you hear about other people doing this and try to incorporate it into your own game.
Sure. Better. Well, even more than that, just because, again, having never seen the game, just listening to people talk about it. So people talk about, you know, their characters exploring a dungeon and being killed by a giant spider and all this kind of stuff. I don't know what dice they're rolling. I don't know if they're playing with a game board or not. I don't know that they have rule books that explain this. So I'm trying to put together in my head, you know, what kind of game is this? So I
Is this more mechanic heavy and prop heavy, or is this a narrative game? Is this an oral game?
Right. And these are all things that I'm thinking without even using those terms. Because back in the day, and again, I was in seventh grade. So, you know, that stuff was way beyond me. But even in that time, those were not popular terms.
Yeah.
So
when you actually started like playing actual D&D, did you find it a little confusing because you'd already built a rule set of your own?
No way. It was just the opposite. I found it easier. I was like, wow, so we can sit down.
Somebody spent time and made this work.
Yeah, you can be characters in a story and you can change things. That's great. Yeah, this is exactly what I wanted. I was so enthusiastic and gung-ho about it. You know, I was roaring. I was raring to go.
On that same note of you can be characters in a story. Do you have any authors or books that inspired you for the style of system that you write, the style of gaming that you play?
That's a good one. Yeah, there. So if we're talking about the stuff I'm writing now, yeah, there's a lot of media that influences that. I'm very fascinated by the whole transhumanism thing.
Oh yeah.
So one of the games you were angling towards earlier is Outer Stars, the code name for the one that I'm working on currently, which is a far future sci-fi kind of horror survivalist post-apocalyptic, you know.
Pokemon Pasta?
Yeah, Pokemon Pasta. Oh, man, that would be terrible.
I always wonder if they eat the Pokemon in that universe.
That would be terrible. But yeah, so transhumanism was a thing that I really wanted to explore in that where, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean for you to reside in a body or reside in a computer or, how do artificial intelligences play into it? That sort of thing. So,
have you read the Southern Reach series?
I have not.
They made Annihilation recently, was in theaters. I think it's out on DVD now.
Oh, okay.
But it explores a lot of that same thing. What does it mean to be life?
Sure.
Yeah. I love that kind of questioning mystery thing.
And those are real popular terms now. So you'll see things like that in Altered Carbon and Anon, I think, was another
That's
one.
That's sort of the current trend of a lot of science fiction.
It is.
Yeah. For sword and sorcery and like fantasy and stuff, a lot of the influences that people get are from Conan or from...
From
like classic Robert Jennings and Lovecraft kind of stuff. But is there anything else you would throw into that bucket?
If we're talking about fantasy.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
No, we've already established that you think I'm an idiot for not wanting to keep going with my D&D game.
Well, not an idiot. I just think you're maybe misguided. I don't know. How can you get tired of sword and sorcery? It's gotta be the games you're playing.
I think
we have a lot of games in this group.
Oh, we do have so many
games. And it's
hard
to schedule stuff. So I run two games. I'm going to level that down to just one for the rest of this year.
Yeah.
I'll go back.
Eventually.
Got to finish out Dark Heresy.
But no, yeah, you got to explore a little too. I do understand sometimes you again, talking about the shiny objects, you know, gamers have got to be the worst.
Gamers are crows.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Oh, yeah. Or squirrels. Yeah.
Yeah. You see something interesting, squirrels. You want to take it back. That's your whole world.
Sure. As far as literature goes, I don't know. I was really, the D&D history itself is, to me, something that always kind of influenced me. So when you started as young as I did, you read everything you got your hands on. You know, Dragon Magazine was a big thing in my day. So I read those suckers every time they came out, like comic books. So, you find out things about, you know, the Gith and,
A lot of that stuff's sort of gone on the back burner nowadays.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I still... Dad originally got into reading Analog, the science fiction magazine.
Oh, yeah.
I got on board of it because of him. So we have a collection starting from when it started to current, and people don't know what I'm talking about when I bring up Analog.
Right.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, that's really going back in the day. You're getting into anywhere from the 1920s to the 1960s. Those pulp magazines really influenced what would become role-playing games.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely... Gygax and Arneson were hugely influenced by Tolkien, as everyone else in the wargaming was at that time. So that's really where you get Dungeons and Dragons from, is a mixture of wargames and Tolkien and people putting one and one together and making 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
when you mentioned reading the history for D&D, I have to ask, because everyone has a favorite, but what is your favorite setting for D&D? Is it Greyhawk? Is it Eberron?
That's good. That's good. Well, you know, the nostalgia for Greyhawk's pretty strong for me.
It's pretty strong for a lot of people.
Yeah. I've seen the original hand-drawn map, so it's kind of hard for me to not look at that and go, ooh.
Yeah.
Nerdgasm, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So. I don't want to call you out on it, but you didn't really say an answer there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a tough one. It's really tough. Maybe it is Greyhawk. Now, I did run probably my favorite D&D campaign proper in Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
Because Forgotten Realms came out while I was in college. You know, it was right around the time Second Edition came out. So when that hit, that was the big new, you know, that was the hot stuff. So, but I got into it immediately and made it my own. Like I said, okay, all this stuff that's in Forgotten Realms, that's flavor. That may not be real in my particular game. We're gonna make our own history, do our own thing.
Oh, so, a lot of GMs and DMs do that. It's
par for the course.
Yeah.
You're just trimming away at what you want.
Yeah. Right. We're all creative people, or else we wouldn't be doing this hobby, right? So
we're all narcissists, though. We all want it to be our own thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I'm the DM. I make the rules. Screw this book.
So with your current system that you the systems that you're writing, are you ever worried about copying other existing? There's so many fucking systems.
No, not really.
Are you ever worried about copying mechanics or copying ideas from some other?
No, well, you know what they say, there's nothing new under the...
The first one to get published is the one that got it.
Yeah.
You are correct. And to be fair, Outer Stars is a Powered by the Apocalypse derivative game. Mm-hmm. So it's not... it's my own spin on it, for sure.
It's like a plug-in.
Right. And there are definitely elements to the game which are developed by me, new... You know, a new spin on it, but it is a Powered by the Apocalypse game. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If a game works well for you, there's no reason for you not to pursue it. If it's good mechanics, it's good mechanics.
So I've heard about it. It was a couple of months ago, but remember the most of it. But for our listeners, can you describe some of what your new systems are going to have to them?
You mean mechanics wise, or just in
general? I just want you to plug. Yeah, just plug.
Just plug it. Well, we've talked a little about Outer Stars, so we can talk a little about Dungeon Hack. Dungeon Hack is Ken wanting to go back to a classic D20 fantasy game, but apply those rules light movements that are so hot right now to D20. And this is something that's been done a little bit as well. It's you may not be familiar with the White Hack or the Black Hack, but these are kind of popular OSR games. You probably are familiar with things like Lamentations of the Flame Princess, mm-hmm. or you know, those kinds of Dungeon Crawl classics. Actually, all of these
Dungeon Crawl classics is confusing to me.
Confusing to you?
I am also
a huge D&D.
I know it's D&D, but like I remember those dice sets coming in.
Oh, now that'll throw you off. If you don't know anything about Dungeon Crawl classics and you see the dice, you will probably run.
How many dice is it? It's 15, I think.
I think there are 15. So there's one for every progress. So you've got your classic role-playing set, right? You've got a D4, a D6, a D8, etc. Okay, so Dungeon Crawl Classic fills in the gap. So you've got a D4, you've got a D3 before that, a D5, a D7, a D9.
Yeah.
There's a D14, I think a D16.
And none of these are proper. Like, none of these are proper, the polyhedrals.
These are not platonic solids.
Yeah, these are not platonic solids.
This sounds so unnecessarily confusing.
Well, it's just, I think it's Joseph Goodman being funny.
John Goodman
wrote an RPG. I wonder if it would involve him getting removed from television. Sorry, John. I didn't mean it. But yeah, I think Joseph Goodman was having fun with Dungeon Crawl Classics. I mean, it was meant to be, I think, kind of a, I don't know if parody is a fair word, but, you know.
Like an homage.
Yeah, like an homage to Dungeons & Dragons and classic 1970s role-playing, so.
Okay, like, so how LaCroix is to other things that have flavor.
Oh my, yes. That may be grossly unfair.
So it's adding degrees of success and failure to the role.
Sure, and that's really all it is we all love to play with dice. And
of course.
It's one of the reasons why I wanted to do Dungeon Hack
Some
as well.
Some of us love to play with them more than others.
Absolutely. I mean, and we get into collecting them. I mean, dice are just fun.
You should knock before you...
Absolutely.
Don't kink shame, Dottie.
Kink shaming. I'm kink promoting.
If you hear a clink... Don't come in. Yeah. But yeah, I wanted with Outer Stars, you know, that's nothing but 2d6 most of the time, sometimes 3d6. This is pretty typical Powered by the Apocalypse games. And I've done that for over a year now. So it was just getting to add more dice and play with dice. I thought that was a very legitimate game perspective, right?
Something to put in a game. A lot of games do that through... bad way. They add more dice to a game in useful ways to the GM for them to incorporate as they see fit, mm-hmm. but bad ways in the sense that they're not incorporated well enough. It's usually just, here's a table.
Okay.
Here's, there's not enough good mechanic built around adding dice that aren't usually seen in your game. Dark Heresy did it for first edition, one of the campaign books, because Dark Heresy is a D10 percentile system. The D100 thing.
That goes back pretty far, you know, 1975.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
A little trivia for you. What game first introduced percentiles into role-playing?
I have no idea. I'm going to let Dottie groan over this, apparently.
I'll give you a hint. TSR put it out.
Oh, fuck, I don't know.
Well, you know, they put out D&D. You knew that,
I know they put out D&D. I don't know...
That would be Empire of the Petal Throne by Phil Barker.
Is that an Eastern-style game?
Yes, it is.
Why I don't know what the fuck it's about.
It is, maybe, but... so that is one of the classic role-playing games of all time. It's one of the hallmarks of role-playing, actually. There are people that seek that game out nowadays because of its history. It is a... legitimate.
Chasing that buzz.
Yeah,
chasing
definitely.
That buzz of historical role-playing.
Absolutely.
Without it being actual history.
Oh, no, it's definitely, it's far removed from that. It's actually a sci-fi fantasy game. It's about Earth, well, not Earth, but Earth people that colonize another planet, and that planet slips into an alternate dimension, and it's terrifying because there are no stars in that alternate dimension. So here you've got your little solar system, and suddenly it disappears into nothing, and time goes on for tens of thousands of years, and you continue...
We got to find this game. Right?
I know, right? I'm like, can we play this? Let's get this going.
This sounds like some straight-up Gene Wolfe shit.
Yeah, so you're in a fantasy game, magic and sorcery and all this kind of stuff, with aliens and technology buried beneath you. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Man, that sounds like so much fun. Dash
but anyway.
Would love that.
So we ask this question to a lot of... Every time we have a guest... on, or we have another person outside of the usual four of us. What is, or in your case was, your favorite system to play and party you have played with? I know Dion's probably in it.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know some of my old fogies.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Oh, favorite systems. Man, that's a good one. I played Dungeons & Dragons for so long, D20 system. So... I think by default, that's going to be one of my favorites, but I probably can no longer claim it to be my favorite. Once I got into some recent modern RPGs, again, this rules light sort of movements, there are some of those that have just hypnotized me. Powered by the Apocalypse games are just awesome.
The power of narrative descriptors for actions is fantastic. The Fate system I've fallen in love with recently.
Fate's awesome. Definitely. So those are all powerful games. I love those mechanics. I'm very fascinated with trying the White Hack. Now, it is a D20 system game, but it definitely puts a good spin on a D20. So I haven't played it yet, but I keep looking at it going, I've got to do that.
So our parties, we tend to, like all of the people who are in the podcast, tend to focus on Savage Worlds a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We play a lot, not Dottie, Dottie excluded, but Dash and Wes both work out of Savage Worlds a lot. I was curious if you had any thoughts on that, since it's the system we talk about the most.
Savage Worlds looks great. Now, I've never played Savage Worlds. You know, bad game.
Fair enough.
But I've read it, and it looks great. It being a generic system that can handle a lot of different settings, see it being very dynamic. It's got a very simple role mechanic as well.
Yeah, I think the reason that our GMs tend to focus on that one is because they can make their own stories however they want them to
Absolutely.
Be.
Absolutely.
Like, we have a fantasy game with Savage Worlds, a sci-fi. We've done a Japanese samurai game with Savage Worlds. Like, you can do anything with
it. This is why it's crazy that I haven't played that, because those are all the things that I love doing right now.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think also they go for it because a lot of the players that come into it weren't role players to start with.
That's
a very
true.
Easy system to pick up.
It was the first one I played, and I mean, it was confusing when I started, but now I know it like the back of my hand, and I've only been playing for a year or so.
This is actually a challenge of mine. I like to see just how minimalistic you can be and suck players into it. So, and again, powered by the Apocalypse
does
as
well.
Right? Indeed.
Somehow.
When you can take, so when I hook new players in now with my games, I give them a sheet. A single sheet of paper, double-sided, that has your entire character and all your character choices on it, distilled down to checkboxes.
Can I get a copy of this sheet and steal it from you,
please? Absolutely. And it also has the basic mechanics on it for how the entire game runs. So we can sit down, you can go over your character and have it done in 5 or 10 minutes, and then we're off and playing.
Yeah. Nice.
Nice.
So our last big thing here was Alex's currently trying to write Harry Potter into a system or an adaptation of a system. Do you have any advice for her?
Oh, my. Well, you said you like Fate.
I haven't actually messed around with Fate, but I have heard that as a suggestion before. There are already some, like, fan-made Harry Potter games online, sure. And I didn't feel like any of them were, like, just right. I'm a massive Harry Potter fan, but it's difficult because, like, there's no, like, limit on the magic, and it... Like, Harry Potter universe doesn't have very good rules.
Right.
So.
Well, there is there's definitely already a Fate Dresden Files, I believe it is.
Yep.
Okay.
So that may be a hop, skip, and a jump away from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to look into that. Yeah,
look at that.
Have you ever read Dresden Files?
I have not, but I know general things about
so
it.
So good for quick kill.
But
books.
I would say look at your favorite system. That you currently like, and then think about how, you know, the world of Harry Potter would work within that system, and that'll kind of tell you where you want to go from there.
Yeah, I've played around with Savage Worlds a lot on it, because, again, it's the system I know the best. But, I mean, the PowerPoints don't make any sense, and none of the magic powers make any sense, and, you know, everybody's
system
just...
is real important to getting the feel of a particular setting.
And I even had players roll up characters within it, and everybody just ended up being way OP, and I was like, this isn't exactly gonna work.
It's also kind of the standard for Savage Worlds, as it skews hugely heavily to the player.
Yeah, that's true.
And in most systems, your player is still going to be the main focus of the game. They're going to have an advantage. They're going to have a leg up on the campaign itself. But Savage Worlds tends to really skew. It's hard to die.
Shooting is so
even
broken.
Even if you want to.
Magic is so broken. I mean, it's fun.
It sounds like Rifts.
Yeah. Wait, no. Is Rifts the one where you can die in character creation, though?
No, that's Traveler.
That's Traveler. That was it. Yeah.
There's something to be said about that.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of want to play that. I want to see if I can die during character creation.
Well, it's not that hard. After I finish up the other the D&D and the Dark Heresy game, I was thinking of probably running a Paranoia for these kids.
Oh yeah, yeah. Paranoia
is a classic. Bring back some classic.
Most definitely. Well, cool.
Thank you for coming on the show, bud. If there's anything you want to plug, go ahead and plug away.
Oh no, I think we covered all the bases. That was fantastic.
Plug your store.
Yes.
Plug your business, damn it.
come to Excelsior and enjoy some RPGs. Or whatever else you're into.
Whatever else you're into.
We do
maybe
it all.
Not, you've got, maybe you've, not whatever you've also, else.
Well, yeah, that may not be good.
That clink.
Absolutely.
You've also got the convention coming up?
We do. So at the end of July, last weekend in July, 27th through the 29th, is Hoover Library's Sci-Fi Fantasy Fest. I'll be giving a talk there on the history and evolution of role-playing games.
Awesome.
That's on that Friday night, the 27th at 8 p.m.
Very nice
okay.
to hear.
Okay, yeah. Sounds yeah. great.
Thanks for coming on, bud.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys, for having me.
For sure.
Our pleasure.
We should invest in a light.
We can just manifest a light.
Yeah, but it's... All right, fine. How did you enjoy the creepy sound of voices surrounding you in the void?
I've gotten pretty used to it, to be honest. You know, it's almost a little bit of a comfort. I think they're whispering things to me that they want me to do. So we'll see how that turns out. Yeah,
we'll see who gets axed next season.
Yeah, yeah.
Surprise! It's probably Tane.
Yeah. I've already got plans for Tane.
I don't think he can be killed. I don't think I genuinely think it's impossible to kill him.
Oh, he can be stopped.
As for the interview, what'd you think?
It was good.
That's fair. So early on, when I asked him about his history with role playing games, he mentioned he got into Dungeons and Dragons almost at the very beginning.
Yeah,
right as the shit was dropping.
Right,
and before that, there really wasn't a lot of role-playing games of that kind of caliber and popularity. You had maybe a few people that had sort of this loose system of rules that wasn't really balanced at all playing something out. Or you had... It was a good way to merge that board game or miniature game sort of mentality into those classic Tolkien and Conan, like, fantasy genres. Mm-hmm. Into now you are going to play the character in this story. And your dice rolls are going to influence how well you are doing at this.
Okay.
Or your choices that you make. And he started off with the old Yellow Pages book. Have you ever seen one of those?
Yeah, well, I've never seen one in person, but I've seen pictures of it online.
I have one of them.
Yeah.
They're all either really good condition or really fucked up. I got mine in a yard sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old mom's dads who didn't know what the fuck they had. It's not worth shit. It was pretty fucked up. Yeah. But it's one of the cool ones that has like blue pages towards the end where they were running out of yellow paper. But yeah, it had Gary Gygax's phone number in the back, so you'd call him and ask him rules questions.
Just
and shit.
Call him whenever you like, yeah.
I probably figured out that was a bad idea. But he got into it before Advanced Dungeons & Dragons was called Advanced and all that. He mentioned there were not really any other role-playing games of that caliber to exist for a while. I think RuneQuest and I forget the one, something with Sun Petal or something.
Oh, yeah. That did sound like a really cool, awesome system.
It's this dystopic styled, there's some Eastern stuff to it, but it's this dystopic styled multiverse in space thing.
Nice.
So you are playing, whatever you're playing, on top of other layers of like buried alien civilizations and shit.
Yeah, nice. It sounded... Yeah. Really cool, and I think it'd be cool to get our hands on that if possible. And
I'll look into it.
Maybe do some delving and raiding.
A listener was kind enough to donate some stuff to me today. Actually, I got an email from
nice,
lovely.
One of our listeners in Washington.
Gave
me a bunch of PDFs of the Iron Kingdoms books. The Iron Kingdoms books.
Nice.
Which I used to play War Machine like fucking fanatically, and I love that universe. So, man, eventually we might run an arc in that. I gotta learn that system. But yeah, thanks, Tucker. I forget which city you're from, but thanks to you in Washington. But we went on from that to, you know, what is the influence for a lot of your stories, your games that you either create or you adapt.
Uh-huh.
A lot of us that have played Dungeons & Dragons have a favorite setting. You know, you have your Eberron, your Forgotten Realms, your Greyhawk, all that stuff. And almost all GMs that go back in the line of systems will say Greyhawk. There's nostalgia to it, but it is that simple. I don't want to say bland because it's very cut and dry. Here's the fantasy world. It's very Conan-esque. And like, here's the fantasy world. There's evil shit. We don't know why there's evil shit, but there is.
Yeah.
I love those classic dungeon things. But asking about influences, we've talked about this a bit on the podcast, but I don't think we've ever ourselves mentioned what our influences are for a lot of our intention to build stories and build games.
Actually, it's funny because you mentioned in that lineup, a lot of people say their favorite is, you know, Greyhawk. I actually drew a lot of inspiration from Eberron originally for some of my games. That was some of the lore for that influenced my artist stuff.
Warforged?
Warforged specifically, yep. Yeah, that, a lot of that for sure.
Yeah. I like Eberron just fine from a story perspective. I don't think I ever enjoyed it. I played like two hopeful campaigns in mm-hmm. it that couldn't last. It just wasn't. The parties we had were not balanced for that system.
Like I said, I was really influenced by Eberron, but there's a reason I don't actually use it.
Yeah.
Oh, my main influence is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I think that's been made pretty clear.
It's been made. You are the other version of me on this podcast where you talk about one fucking thing. So welcome. My main influences, as everyone knows from every single episode that I'm on, Star Heresy. I love the Warhammer 40K universe.
We know.
It's a butt-blastingly huge amount of lore, and...
Yeah, you seem to know a pretty good amount of it, yeah.
Yeah.
You do know a lot of it.
We were talking a bit about this in the interview, but I did want to compile all of my notes down to make that weird war dystopic, like early World War One, like before World War One, sort of 1890s style game.
Okay.
For Savage Worlds.
Yeah.
However, when we got done talking about it, I was like, man, there's a lot of other systems I could plug that into. I may make that for Fate. Instead.
Okay. I also, as we mentioned in the interview, want to look into Fate because Ken kindly offered his opinion on my Harry Potter game issue. So I don't know anything about the system, never played it, but it's been thrown out a couple times as an option. So I think I'm going to definitely look into that and try and...
Did you look into the Dresden Files stuff?
Not yet.
Okay. I'll see if I can find those links and send them off to you. That and I need to look at the White Hack stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we moved on from there. We went over to the systems he was creating, and we had a quick rundown of that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about a plug-in system? Like a system where it's augmenting
right.
and subtracting a bit from other systems, and specifically D20 in this case, but other systems. I personally think that's a fantastic idea, because D20 on the whole, I mean, it does depend on the system, but D20 on the whole can get boring if you're just in it all the time.
Yeah.
Now, Ken thinks I'm a heretic for saying that I find Sword and Sorcery...
He was very...
boring after a while. I should balance it out by saying I find Sword and Sorcery boring after a while in the same way that I find science fiction boring after a while.
Yeah.
If you are stuck doing the same fucking thing for long enough, it's boring. Oh, God.
You are just...
You are really working on digesting Klein right now.
Burpee, baby. Holy shit. How do you feel about that idea of a plug-in system?
No, I like that a lot. That honestly,
attachment, I should say.
Honestly, I mean, it's the same as really any any supplement for any type of game. I mean, Dungeons and Dragons has had plenty of like supplementary material. You know, I mean, this is just sort of a deeper, like a full-on mechanics sort of change. But I don't think it's any different from any other.
This is a deeper penetration.
I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that at all.
You said I was kink shaming yesterday. I was kink promoting.
You are definitely now kink promoting. See, I feel like that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Stand in your truth and chase your bliss. Yeah.
Maybe your bliss seems to be eating Klein. So I don't. Maybe not.
I have no comment.
Your bliss was apparently killing Klein, so I don't know if you're one to judge.
Well, yeah, obviously it was.
Yeah.
But murder, okay, murder compared to cannibalism.
Like I said, this is a multiverse. Maybe. We did not actually kill Klein. We killed part of Klein.
We killed a Klein.
That sounds even creepier.
No, I mean, it's like when you go to like a really tough school and some teacher kills your imagination.
Wow.
Oof. Yeah, it's not that dark.
That's heavy, man.
Moving on. I'm dying.
We'll miss you, Dottie.
So we got around to talking about Alex's needing to adapt her Harry Potter love into a game. You've had troubles with this.
I've had a lot of troubles.
And there's a bunch of fantasy writers that talk about it. But I remember it was a episode of Imaginary Worlds or something where they had Patrick Rothfuss on to talk about the differences between hard and soft magic.
Mm-hmm.
That difference between a scientific take and a poetic take. You have Tolkien on one side with poetic magic.
Yes.
Magic is there. It affects things, but it's more of a wizards just know a lot more than everybody else. And then you have hard magic in the case of Name of the Wind, where Koth, there is ways that it works. There's also soft magic in it with the naming system, but I mean the sympathy and all that stuff. There's ways that it works, and here's the resource control sort of thing to it. A lot of people do not like J.K. Rowling's design for magic because it is in the middle.
It is. It is very much so in the middle.
It does not sway either way, and it doesn't have a lot of, I hate to say, like, magic that makes no sense, because magic doesn't make sense in the first place.
Right.
But it makes no sense. There's too many loopholes.
And that's definitely the problem with Harry Potter. I mean,
Fate is the best system for it, in my opinion, because mm-hmm. that's a narrative descriptive game.
And that's the thing, because the magic in Harry Potter, although that's like what it's about, it's really much more about the characters and their interactions with each other and like the society they're in. And less so about like, oh, well, this is how magic works.
It's very abstract, really.
I've always been pretty disappointed in that. I will admit my shame and say that I've delved into fan fiction and read some interesting theories on like people trying to explain the way magic works.
Are you admitting that the magic is kind of dumb?
I'm admitting that the magic is great for the series.
I'll take it. Got him!
Even if I can say that the magic is a little messy in Harry Potter, I will not say that Harry Potter is
sloppy.
Dumb. Those are synonyms.
I think sloppy is a grosser word.
All right, we're going to have to battle this out at some point, Dottie.
Yeah. but yeah, this was our awesome season 2 opener. Sorry that Wes couldn't be here with us, but I hope everything's going well with him. And thank you for joining us, Alex.
Thank you for letting me join. I've just been sitting silently watching for a whole season.
No, it was more like you leached on, and then after a while, we just gave up on trying to get rid of it.
Just so you know, if you go back and listen to any of those old episodes, Alex is just standing perfectly still in the void, saying nothing, unblinking.
Or like teeth sunk into Dash's arm, just latched on for the ride.
Yeah, pretty much.
But we've got a lot of cool stuff planned for this season. We've got a couple of Realm Raiders arcs that we're looking to do. Dash will be running this next one, and I think we're going to bring on a guest GM. I don't know if Wes is doing the next one or if we're going to bring on a guest GM first to run us through Call of Cthulhu or something.
Okay.
But we've also got one more interview I think I was going to try and get in with the guys over at Echo 5 Studios.
Right.
We are set to produce another fantastic fun season. Those were great times back in the Titanic.
Oh, the Titanic.
I missed the Titanic bunker.
All right.
I should remanifest the Titanic bunker.
No, you shouldn't. It was depressing. I've been Michael Dottie.
I was once Dash Holman.
And are no longer?
You said you
lost a part of yourself in the exchange of taking a life?
You said you were Michael Dottie, or have been Michael Dottie.
I said I was.
You was, yeah. And still are? Are you not now?
I committed myself to a singularity last season and split myself into three parts. My past, my present, and my future. I'm imagining that I'm going to head to one of my other bodies at some point.
That's
today.
Fair. I guess I just lost a part of myself when I killed Klein.
I'm like the three ghosts.
And that's how Horcruxes work, I'm just saying.
The three Christmas ghosts.
God.
What were their names?
Damn it. Alex, just say your name.
Oh, I'm Alex. I've been Alex Kitson. I will be Alex Kitson. I am currently Alex Kitson.
I have a question, Alex, before we go. Do the Christmas ghosts scare you?
It depends on which
adaptation.
They
can get inside your house. Whoa! Bye-bye!
Whose turn is it?
No, we're not doing that fucking
We're doing
bit.
It!
Whose turn is it?
Whose turn is it?
Take this mic away.
You've been listening to the Earth Hotel Network. This show and others like it can be found at theearthhotel.org. You can send feedback, strange signals, and interpretations of your dreams to theearthhotel@gmail.com. Thank you for joining us. This has been Jackie.